with yin yang, and we're now going to go to Japan. How many of you have been to Japan? Anyone? One. Well, probably for you, you watch Japanese movies and manga and so on, and read a little bit. And certainly, if you are English, you think, or American, you think Japan, China, same. Same people, same faces, same culture, no difference. And many Chinese probably think that although they fought against us in the war, they're roughly the same as us. What I want to show you in this next lecture is that China and Japan are totally different. They could not be more different. Just a narrow sea between you. And unless you understand this, unless the Japanese understand this about you, you will go on misunderstanding, fighting, arguing. If you let me know. So, in what ways are you different from Japan? Let's start with language. To a Westerner, Japanese language and Chinese language look the same. Lots of little characters like this, what the Japanese call kanji. But, of course, the Japanese also have two other alphabets, not pictograms like these, but alphabets. Hiragana and katakana. 26 letter alphabets, and they mix them in with the Chinese characters to form something which is very different from Chinese. Not only are the characters different in Japan, but the structure of the grammar in Japan is totally different. In Japan, for example, you put the word that explains the whole meaning of a sentence right at the end of a sentence. Can you shut it? So that you can't understand a word until you come right to the last word, a sentence, till you come to the last word. In Japanese, you cannot use the personal pronoun. There are personal pronouns, but you must never say I. You must always assume that you are talking about yourself from outside. So you must be over there, and you say, that person over there, who has no hair, and who is very old, thinks, and then you can speak. So you look at yourself from outside. In Japanese, there are no tenses. So you cannot say, I will come, I did come, I am coming. It's all the same. The verbs have no tenses. In Japanese, there is the word for yes and the word for no is the same. So if I ask Gran, will you come to dinner? She will say, hi. That's all she can say, hi. So I have to guess whether she is coming to dinner or not coming to dinner. So it can take a very long time to have a conversation in Japan. But every word has many, many meanings. And so you can, in their poetry, they have very short poems called haiku. And if you read a haiku, it can say, the most famous Japanese haiku is, the frog jumped into the pond, and then there was a sound. But also, that can be translated as, someone got a gun, shot another person, and they died. Both are possible, because every word has many meanings. So, the Japanese have a saying that language is a barrier to communication. Language stops you talking, understanding each other. So if you go into a Japanese restaurant in the past, you would not go there as you do to talk to each other. You go in, you pick up a magazine, usually with pictures, because the language is so complicated, you don't want to read. So you have those picture books that the Japanese love, like manga. You go in, you pick up, if you are going out as a family for a meal, you pick up a book in a restaurant, you all sit round and you look at your books. A bit like Sherry last night in the restaurant. She was working away, so she wasn't talking to us because she was working away. Well, the Japanese do that in restaurants. They don't talk to each other. It's very difficult to talk in Japanese. So that's one great difference. The next is the ideas of beauty and of form, which we call aesthetics. Notions of beauty. A stranger from China going to Japan, or from the West going to Japan and coming here, might say, oh, well, it looks the same. You go to a Buddhist temple here, you see red and gold and gardens and rocks and trees. And Kyoto looks just like some old Chinese cities. But once you go down below the surface, their way of thinking of beauty is totally different from yours. One difference is that the Chinese idea of aesthetics is of balance, yin-yang, of pairs, of oppositions, of balance and harmony. So if you look at the Forbidden City, in Beijing, it is made of squares and squares within squares, and everything balanced left, right. So your cities are like that, and your art is very balanced. The Chinese, the Japanese, when I met them, they said they find Chinese art very boring. So if you have this, you have that. If you have this, no room for the mind to fill in and explore. So the favorite numbers in Japan are irregular numbers. 1, 3, 5, 7, 9. So when Japanese give us a set of teacups, they would never give us 6 or 8. They would give us 5 or 3. Also, the Japanese love things that are just very rough, not smooth. You can see the whole difference between your civilizations. If you look at a Ming tea bowl or famous Chinese porcelain, that's white clay tea bowls, the Chinese ones are very, very smooth and silky and beautiful and symmetrical. If you look at the most expensive and that are considered to be the most beautiful Japanese tea bowls, they look as if they haven't been, nothing has happened to them. They look like a lump of mud. They're black, cracked, burnt, irregular shape. And yet they cost hundreds of millions of yen to buy these, or hundreds of thousands. So they like roughness, they like shadows, they like the mind to allude to things. And also, a final difference is that in Japan, because it's, for various reasons, including the fact it's a very small country, where all the people live in a very, very small area, the whole of the Japanese population, with the area they live in, is about the size of a Chinese county, not even Sichuan. Sichuan is much bigger than Japan, where they live. Not much bigger than Chengdu and some of the places around nearby. So basically, it's a very small place, and therefore they concentrate everything. Their art is very, very small scale. You may have heard of bonsai trees, the little trees that they clip and clip, and they're only about this big. Their gardens are filled with small rocks and little baby trees. They have special little things which they used to hang from their belts called netsuke, which are tiny little objects like this. So everything in Japan is miniaturized. And I remember hearing about this first when my first Japanese friend came to Cambridge, and we went to the garden, and he said, "Your garden is so huge in my college." In Japan, the gardens are very small, because what we do is we make a very small thing, and then we put it into our mind, and we expand it in our mind to its full size. Now, Chinese art, on the whole, is more like ours in that it is full size. Your gardens are big, your houses are big, your art is big. Not this miniaturized version. And this applies even to your opera. Your Kunshi opera and your Beijing opera is very different from the traditional No opera of Japan. So your art and your language couldn't be more different. And then what about the people themselves, their race? For people in the West, they look at your faces, and there is this famous racist remark that for Americans or Europeans, you all look the same. To me, you all look different, but many Westerners say, "Oh, well, you've got a Mongoloid eye fold here, and you have black hair, and you've got certain high cheekbones, you all look the same." Thank you. And so for Westerners, Japanese, Chinese, you can't tell. You see them in the street. They could be either or Korean or whatever. But in fact, racially, you and the Japanese are totally different. You are nearly all derived from the Han people. So when I get on to when I look at you, there is a lot of overlap. You are each different, but most of you look very much the same, though Tibetans look different. But on the whole, you look quite similar. If you go on to you get onto an underground train in Tokyo, people look entirely different. Their faces are all different shapes. Eyes are different, and so on. And this is because, as they have discovered recently, Japan consists of four different peoples. It's a very small place, but it actually consists of different people. So, So with Japan here, there's another island up here, Hokkaido. As you see, Japan is a very long island. And historically, the peoples here have come from four different places. They've done a lot of studies now of the DNA and the customs and the cultures. The people here, Hokkaido, have the remains of the original Japanese population, who were an ethnic, that is, a minority people called the Ainu. And they lived all over the whole of Japan. But when the Japanese came, they pushed them. They killed them and pushed them all up. So there are just a few here left. So that's one group, Ainu. Then a lot of, a third or so of the Japanese came down from Korea, and right from north of China, up in the mountains of Siberia, the Altai Mountains of Siberia. So there are one set of people who are Siberian. Then another group came from China. Too sensitive, this thing. Another group came from China, and in the middle you have some Chinese. And then another group came up along the islands. I won't get too close, but there are islands up here. And they came up the islands from the Pacific. So in the south of China, in Shikoku, Kyushu, that area, you find people whose customs, whose looks, who, for instance, they build their houses often on poles, like they do in the Pacific. So you've got four different groups, and only one of them really overlaps with China. They are obviously all Mongoloid peoples, but they are different from you. So moving on to another aspect. If you asked someone in the West, in England, who hadn't been here, whether the Chinese and the Japanese eat and drink in the same way and the same foods, they'd say, of course. They all eat rice. They drink sometimes something made out of rice. They drink tea. They have a lot of vegetables, just the same. But actually, if you examine the food habits of the Japanese and the Chinese, they are very, very different. To start with the rice, the Japanese hate rice coming from any other country. They'll only eat their own rice because it has a special flavor. And also, they cook it in a different way to you. You cook your rice dry, usually. I mean, sometimes it's with a lot of water, but usually the normal rice you get is dry. In other words, you let all the water come out of it. The Japanese like sticky rice, as they call it. They leave the water with the rice and don't take it all out. So there's a difference in that respect. Secondly, the flavoring, what they add to the rice and the way in which they cook the thing means that the flavoring is totally different. The best way to illustrate this is, as one of my friends told me, he said that we in Japan eat our food with our eyes. That is to say, our pleasure in eating comes from the beauty of the food, the way it is arranged. And so, he said, if you have a beautiful meal and you are eating it with great pleasure, feeling the delicate flavors of this food, which is very much more delicate, and you turn the light off, so you are eating it almost in the dark and you can't see it, it loses all its flavor. It no longer is interesting or tasty. Whereas, he said, if you go to India or China, especially Sichuan, and you're eating and you turn off the lights, the food tastes even better. Because it is full of flavor, spices and so on. Even the eating habits, the Japanese eat, each person has a separate eating area. They would eat, you eat much more communally. You have bowls which you all take things out of. That is not customary in Japan. Or again, your drink. You would think, well, we drink the same things. We drink tea. But the kind of tea you drink is different. The Japanese like green tea, like you, but they have special kinds of very, very, what we call powdered or matcha tea, which is very, very ground up into tiny bits and which you whisk like this. They don't drink like you oolong and pu'er tea. Black, brown teas in the same way, with the same enthusiasm as you do in China. And the way they drink it in terms of their tea ceremony is typical of Japan. What Japan does is to take a custom from another country and then to make it even better, as they consider it. So they took the Chinese tea ceremony. The Chinese way of drinking tea, as you know, is to have lots of little bowls and a teapot, very small teapot. Pour some hot water over it, clean it, clean the cups, put some tea, pour away the tea, and then pour. And it can take 3 or 4 minutes. And that is your tea ceremony. In Japan, have any of you seen the Japanese tea ceremony? No? Well, if you do the full tea ceremony with the matcha tea and with your guests, it can take 2-3 hours. To learn how to do that tea ceremony, to become a tea master, can take you 20 years. Because every gesture, everything, the way your thing hangs down here, the way you turn, the way you turn, everything has to be perfect. The furniture has to be perfect. What you say has to be perfect. The flowers, the arrangement, everything. So it is a whole opera. Just one tea ceremony. And it is the heart of Japanese culture. Tea is very important to you in many ways. But for Japan, it is everything. Their Buddhism, their art, their architecture, their gardens, their philosophy is all around tea. The way of tea, chado, is central and much more important as a ritual ceremonial center to Japanese civilization, even than tea in China. So, in terms of food and drink and other things, Japan is very different. And finally, I will end with another feature of their material world, because the real differences are deeper than what I have been saying. But in terms of their material, their physical world, their material culture is totally different. Again, if you were told, is there much difference between Japanese architecture or housing or clothing or anything like this, you say probably not. And that is because now, of course, it's overlaid with a universal form of modern building and so on. But even now, I think if you actually looked at it carefully, you'd see huge differences. But in the past, they're totally different. For instance, a Chinese house, as we have seen them in the countryside, are very well built, strong, made of stone or strong wood. They have a kang to sleep on. They have a cooking place with a bowl, a wok on top of it. It is a very solid kind of substantial house. Japanese houses were traditionally in the countryside and in the towns totally different. They were described as paper lanterns. A lantern is the thing which you know you hang up, you know, the red lantern. They are like lanterns, very delicate, made of paper and bamboo, and very light. And this was partly because Japan is a country of huge earthquakes. So you needed to make something that was like a tent. When the earth shook, it bent. If you made it with bricks and so on, it would collapse. Another reason was that in the big cities, these houses became dirty, or the Japanese thought they were dirty after about 12 years. So every 10 or 12 years, in a big city like Tokyo or Osaka, the whole city would burn down. Not on purpose, really. I mean, they didn't set it alight, but because it was made of paper and wood, someone would light something and they would catch fire. And on average, every big city in Japan was burnt down every 12 years. They would build stone bills, stone buildings, kura, for their precious objects. And if there was a fire, they would rush with anything that was precious in the house and put it into this building so it wasn't burnt. Then as soon as their city was burnt down, they built it again. So they have very light, they cook on a very tiny amount of fuel, and they have no heating. So the feeling of a Japanese traditional house and a Chinese traditional house is totally different. And the way you behave in a house is totally different. In China, when we visit our friends in houses, we just go in. We go and sit on a bang or on a chair or on something, and we start to talk. In Japan, traditionally, at the moment you came to the entrance, you had to take your shoes off because your feet were dirty. They had been in touch with dirt outside, so you took your feet off, your shoes off, and put special sandals or something on and went inside. And when you went inside, traditionally, there was nothing above the level of the floor. There were no beds, no chairs, no tables. There might be very low tables, but that was all. So you do everything sitting on the floor. You sit on the floor, you lie on the floor, you eat sitting on the floor. So the Chinese have done what we have done in the West, which is to take you off the ground. The Japanese have left you on the ground. But they have made their houses into a sacred space, a special, pure, clean space. They have a special room in slightly richer Japanese houses where they have their famous matting made of rice straw, called tatami matting rooms. And there you should never wear outdoor shoes or anything. You should just go in there. They are almost as if they are like in a temple. So the housing and the way you behave in the house is totally different. And this applies to all of material culture. The clothes you wore in Japan were different traditionally from the Chinese clothes. They were very simple. Men's clothes, women's clothes were nearly the same. Much less use of silk, much more use of cotton. And even down to your shoes, most of the Chinese population until recently didn't wear shoes. When we were watching Rand's film about the war within, the soldiers were running along with their feet, with no shoes on. In Japan, the ground is dirty. Not just dirty as in physically it will make your feet feel a bit dirty, but impure, dangerous, must not be touched. No one should touch the ground with their bare feet. So every Japanese through history has had to wear shoes all the time if you go outside. Geta or little sandals. You could not go outside barefoot in Japan. And this applied even to babies. Babies must never touch the ground with their feet. If you look at traditional pictures of Japanese babies, they're never touching the ground. They have to be carried all the time. If they're outside, they must be on someone's back. So babies up to, or children until they can walk and wear shoes, were always carried in Japan. Whereas I've seen in China young babies just sitting out, you know, playing on the ground and so on, getting their hands dirty, and no one worries about that in China. But that is totally different. Every aspect of material culture is different. For example, in Japan, they didn't have animals. In Buddhist culture, you have just a very few buffalo, perhaps, to help you plow, just a very few, and a very few very small horses. But they didn't have, as in China, pigs. No pigs, no ducks, no chickens, no cows, no sheep, no goats, none of those. It was a civilization without animals, because to eat a four-legged animal is absolutely taboo. You can eat fish, maybe if you shoot a wild animal, but no tame animals can be eaten in Japan traditionally. Of course they do now. So your culture of pigs and ducks eating combined with vegetables and rice is totally different from, even down to the diseases that people had were very different in Japan. Because it was an island, a long island here, what they did was they didn't allow anyone to come from outside into Japan. No stranger. I'll talk more about this later because it's very important for you to understand in relation to Japan. If you were a stranger, if you were a Chinese or a Westerner, you had to go to a special port around here, Nagasaki. Nagasaki may be down here, but anyway. The special port of Nagasaki, and there was a small island in the bay called Deshima Island. You had to go and live there. They did not allow impure Western people or Chinese to come in. And the result is that the diseases which you find here, particularly something called plague, bubonic plague, which is spread by rats, and was a terrible disease which its center was up here in Mongolia, in that area. And every few 50 years, 100 years, it would spread around China. And other diseases that you have on this mainland didn't go into Japan. They never had bubonic plague. And they didn't have a lot of the mainland diseases. So Japan was very free of disease, not much waterborne disease until later. So this little rocky island here, or quite a big rocky island, has a totally different material world to yours. And that is the surface. But I will now let you have a little break, and you can ask some questions if you like to. And then we will go on to the deeper levels, which are even more different. Okay? So if anyone wants to ask a question, do. Otherwise, we have 5 minutes or so rest. Okay? Thank you.